I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Glad you're listening. Happy Thursday. I represent the political middle, and I am joined on the left by State Senator Jim DeBacchus. Welcome, Jim.
Good morning, Natalie.
And it's so wonderful to have Chris Blake, the president of the Utah Charter Schools Association and a political guru representing the right. Welcome, Chris.
Good morning, Natalie. Great to be here.
We have a full slate of local issues to talk about and some that are not local. I want to start by talking about a very sad situation happening in our state right now. It's the ongoing investigation in Saratoga Springs and this shooting of, is it Darian Hunt? And just this feeling that I have that this is going to get worse before it gets better, that we have a situation here where some injustice has occurred, and don't want to, you know, be in advance of investigation, but what a tragedy, Jim.
21-year-old Saratoga Springs, African-American young man who grew up in Utah kid, spoke to his mother, went down to the candle vigil the other night. She said he was a little bit of an oddball, but in a kid kind of way. He had just left college and headed out to the Panda Express to get a job, and in his goofball mind, pulled a toy samurai sword out and thought that might help him with the interview at the Panda Express. Maybe not the best thing to do. Nobody's quite sure what happened next, but Saratoga Springs Police, and if you go back about 6 months to a City Weekly, there is a full cover story issue about this is a police department that is out of control. And I had a very prominent senator, a Republican, come to me yesterday and say, Jim, this is a police department that is overly aggressive, that is out of control, that has been that way for a long time. So this young man is leaving Panda Express, apparently has some kind of sword, and he ends up getting 6 bullets in the back. Now goes to the Utah County Attorney's Office to take a look and investigate and see what happened. And I couldn't help but in the first 48 hours after the investigation to look at their comments. This seems to be Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde here, because within hours, this is the entity that is supposed to be doing this independent report says, there's no indication that race played any role in the confrontation within a few hours. Mm-hmm. Then they put out a statement as this story about him having a sword that may or may not have been a ceremonial one. They put out a statement that said he was brandishing a sword and lunged it toward officers. Then they put out another statement that said it wasn't plastic, it wasn't wood. It appears to be a samurai sword. But then when the autopsy reports came out and they said, how could this man have been shot in the back 6 times if he was lunging toward police officers? The Utah County attorney said, we're not commenting on this. We have an ongoing investigation and it wouldn't be right to be talking about it. Well, now with the national media there, Rachel Maddow did a show. The New York Times has done a story. CNN has been there. The Guardian has been here. We need the Los Angeles Times, the Huffington Post, CNN. We need a clean, clear investigation for the family, for the community, for the officers. And we can't have one of these kind of cover-up, you know, pat him on the back.
Press release from each side.
Press release from
each
side. We need a thorough, complete, absolute investigation. And at least given what's happened so far, I'm not sure that the Utah County District Attorney can do it. It ought to maybe be the state or the federal government that comes in and has a clear, clean, absolute, objective look. As I held that mother in my arms and she sobbed, she said, you know, had this been, and she's white, mm-hmm. had this been a white young man with blonde hair, he would not have been shot. Now, admittedly, those are certain circumstances, and we don't know all the facts, but until we're assured that all the facts are in and true and above board and there's no backroom deals, I don't think any of us can sleep well.
Chris, Jim makes the point that this is a police department that perhaps has had some overreach for some time now. Mia Love, former mayor of Saratoga Springs, will this come and bite her in any way, do you think?
I wouldn't think so. You know, I'm conflicted on this issue, the issue of police overreach. I think it's an area where the left and the right have come together. But as I think and hear Jim's explanation and concern, it also makes me think of a friend of ours, Derek Johnson, who pulled up next to a car to help them out one morning and ended up losing his life. And I think about the job our police officers do. They don't know when something is going to turn deadly or ugly. And so that's the thing that always kind of pulls me back is what really happened? What are the circumstances? There are things that you have to wonder about that we can't know. Was there emotion? Was there something that happened there? At the same time, I'm really concerned that a young man in Saratoga Springs, I live not too far from there, is shot 6 times by our police.
Yeah.
That just seems too much. Once again, the investigation has to take place. I disagree with Jim. I think our Utah County District Attorney's Office will do a fine job. I think they will be fair and above board in making sure that the facts are looked at and holding those accountable that need to be held accountable. But it's a tragic situation, yeah. One that we don't want to see anywhere.
Well, and I knew in bringing it up that this wasn't really a left-right issue, but I felt like it is something that as a community we need to wrestle with. And it goes beyond the investigation. It goes beyond where are the seeds planted for anything bad like this to happen, and let's go change that. There is no good transition away from that. We don't have a lot more time in this first segment, but I did notice that the state went public, Salt Lake County went public, the Convention and Visitors Bureau went public with a new marketing campaign called Ski City USA. And they're taking on the notion of a ski town instead of a ski city. And that indeed we have an urban area where there's all these amenities that go with the skiing. Are you, Chris, excited about this? Are you a skier yourself? Do you give a lot of kudos?
Unfortunately, I used to be, and then I decided to take a career in politics, and the legislature has totally screwed that
ruined
up.
They've
ruined it for me. But I think this is phenomenal, and I love it. And it's all part of a broader effort to see Mountain Accord, to see us really brand Salt Lake City and this area, which is urban and right next to the mountains. You know, I love to joke and tease Denver. When you're in Denver, it takes 45 minutes, not just to get to the ski slopes, but to get from the airport to downtown, and then you got to go another 2 hours to get to a good ski resort. This is the place for skiing, and I love that we're taking advantage of it. We need to do a better job. We need to push it forward, and I love it.
Yeah, it's great. Jim, this is a great example where the state and Salt Lake County, through Visit Salt Lake, have come together and marketed this incredible amenity we have.
Amen. I mean, we're spending $13 million a year portraying the state for all tourism. We could well be spending 3 or 4 times that and get an even bigger windfall. It's a very good program.
Another thing that happened, Salt Lake Community College named their new president, Denise Huftalen. I don't know if you two gentlemen know Denise, but I am just privately cheering inside. This is a woman who came up through the ranks in Salt Lake Community College. They picked an insider, which they don't often do. I know they did it with President Pershing, but another great pick. But we have a female a college president. I celebrate that as a community, Jim.
1 out of 9?
Chris?
Well, President Bioto did a great job and really understood the mission of that university, and we wish Denise, president, the new president, the best.
Yeah, and I would just say to listeners, watch her move, because she's got it all. She's a great leader. She's a very generous leader. My husband teaches with Salt Lake Community College, and you know, he's at this kind of level far removed from the president, but he just says he's even felt it at his level. So good stuff to come. In our next segment, we are going to talk about the Scottish vote today, what's going to happen with the Brits, and we're also going to talk about the budget surplus and Greater Canyonlands.
On the right, filling in for Representative Greg Hughes, I'm Chris Blake.
On the left, filling in for Jim DeBacchus, I'm Jim DeBacchus.
And I'm Natalie Gochner in the political center, representing all you moderates out there on both sides of the aisle. We got news yesterday that Governor Herbert, in his monthly news conference, has gotten very clear indication from Secretary of Interior Sally Jewell that President Obama will not set aside, you know, the Greater Canyonlands National Monument. And he you know, made it seem like this is a done deal. Immediately when I heard that, just I was a little nervous because I don't like it when states and interior, particularly our state where the interior has so much power in our state, when a governor acts like something's for certain when it's a political world, Jim. And
Natalie.
Well, I just feel like he just, in what he said there, all of a sudden interior's been put in a corner, and I'm not so sure it works that way.
You have been a heartbeat away from the Interior Secretary and from the EPA Secretary and from, I guess, not Interior, but from those cabinet officials during your time in Washington. You understand that power emanates from the White House, and when cabinet officials get put in a bad light by governors or by anybody else,
triangulated with the White House,
it is not a good thing. And that's exactly what Governor Herbert did yesterday. It's a boneheaded move, but it may well seal the fate of us getting an Antiquities Act declaration in Canyonlands. And let me tell you how that works. Later today, I'll be talking to Secretary Jewell, and I'll be saying, how could you have done that? How could you have taken the stick of a monument off the table while the bishop process is going? And that's what I'm going to be saying to the White House. That's what Sue is going to be saying. That's what the Sierra Club and the White House is going to come back with a big club to Secretary Jewell. My guess is that was not a good move by the governor. It is riling up the entire environmental community all over the country, and it will mean that Bishop better not be stalling. There better be a process. Our rural county commissioners better sit down, and we better get serious, because at the end of the day, despite what the governor said, there will be a monument declared, and maybe several of them, by President Obama. And so it's all up to Utah now. Sit down, roll up your sleeves, get the maps out, get a bill, do things you don't think you ever could do, and demand the same of the feds, and let's resolve this generational land issue for once and for all.
Chris, we have a governor who's shown that he can cut deals with Secretary Jewell. I mean, he was able to keep our parks open. Unprecedented. I mean, when I heard that was going on, I'm like, well, good luck, Governor. And he delivered.
Yep.
So how do you read this?
Yeah, I look at it very differently.
Not surprised.
Obviously, Governor Herbert has an understanding of what he's doing and had a strategy for what he said yesterday. At the same time, I think kudos are for our congressional delegation, particularly Representative Bishop, who have been engaged in this thoughtful, forward-looking process for a long time, doing it under the scenes. They haven't, you know, Rob, who's not typically a PR guy, hasn't been out touting this every day. They've been hard at work, day in, day out, focused on this process, finding a real solution. My hope is that SUA and these groups that Jim mentioned, who are going to get all outraged, these groups from all over, I don't know why I should care about them, but I hope they're serious about coming to the table and negotiating a real solution. Because I know Utahns will do that. I know Rob will do that. And so I just hope these groups are willing to do that and don't use the stall to say, oh, we're ultimately going to get a monument. We'll just back the Obama administration into this, rather than going through the public process, rather than going through the congressional way that this would most benefit everyone and people would feel validated at the end of the process, rather than, you know, left out in the cold.
One of the blessings of being a moderate is you can kind of, you know, take the best ideas from both sides and solve problems, as you guys know I'm fond of saying on this show. I tend to be closer to you on this, Chris, where I see the potential for the bishop process. For listeners, that's just the notion that there's actually a real public comment, real involved locals kind of process to get some lands preserved here that need to be preserved, rather than doing it by fiat, Jim, through a president who typically does it for political reasons, not for the reasons that would benefit people in Utah.
Look at who's serious and who is acting childishly.
Okay.
2 years ago, our legislature passed House Bill 148. I went to the signing of that. You talk about a bozo moment. There is our governor and our entire congressional delegation and our lieutenant governor and our federal delegation.
So Matheson's in the
room?
And
leadership.
Was Matheson there?
Minus Jim Matheson.
Okay, just I wasn't
are
sure.
Are sitting there. And the governor signs a bill that, ladies and gentlemen, requires the federal government to turn over 31 million acres of land, including the Grand Escalante in totality, requires by December 31st, 2014. That, my friends, is not serious. That is political camp. That was before an election. It was with a flare, and it showed not one bit of seriousness. And it tied up 2 years of our state government. Now, December 31st, what are we going to do? Where are we going with that? That's not showing Washington we're serious. We have a moment now. I'm hope that we'll put our serious faces on. We will go and negotiate and protect our land, also get our rural counties the money they deserve when 80 or 90% of their land is owned by the federal government, and take care of the school trust land jigsaw puzzle for once and for all. We have an opportunity, but I'm not convinced Bishop is serious about it. And if that doesn't happen, bring on the Antiquities Act.
What Jim really doesn't appreciate here is there is tremendous frustration. You mentioned the by fiat. We've been down this road before. Mm-hmm. We felt what we feel like is coming down again. That's why even if it is a political message, has to be sent. These are our lands that we want to protect. We want to use for the betterment of Utahns, for the betterment of our school children, for the betterment of what's best for that land. All of this land is not best to be hiking through it. There are lands that should be used to help benefit our economy. And that's where this frustration comes in, is these outside groups that don't live here, you know, want to bring a solution, want to impose their solution. It just doesn't make sense.
So if you put a lot of well-meaning people of trust in a room and tried to solve this jigsaw puzzle, I think the elements of that solution are abundantly clear. Number one, get lands that have high energy values and get them in state or local or private hands. That's not what the federal government should be doing. Number two, lands that have preservation, get it to the feds. That's what they're doing. They're preserving these for, you know, future generations. Number three, where you have all these federal lands, increase the payment in lieu of taxes so that these local folks get a return. If they're not going to have a tax base, give them a payment stream to support the needs in their state. And number three, I would, four, what number am I on, you guys?
You're four.
Number four, decide. Agree to get this done. This war, this sagebrush rebellion that takes on all different complexions, left, right. Chris, you said in your comment, the governor, I'm assuming, has a strategy. What is it? Because I think you can find solutions here, but I'll tell you, there's not been a governor that's been able to break through.
Well, and I believe that Governor Herbert is sincere and genuine in finding a solution. It's been his MO, and I believe that he has a plan to get there. And I believe that it can be done. We have a process that was done, kind of a mini process that was done by Senator Bennett, Rob Bishop, and others involved down the Washington County area. I look back to Mountain View Corridor, where legislators and government officials and environmental groups sat down and worked on a process that developed the Mountain View Corridor. We didn't have the rancor we had on Legacy Highway. It can be done, and I believe if people will come together wanting real solutions, they can do it. And I know Rob Bishop is serious. I hope the other side is as well.
Let's cross our fingers. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Senator Jim DeBacchus and by Chris Blake, representing the right, I might add, if you don't know that already. yesterday, Jim, I caught your eye at a beautiful ceremony up on Capitol Hill. I guess it could have been 2 days ago, but it was the Mariner Eccles statue unveiled at the Capitol. Chris, were you there?
I wasn't, but
it's a
know
neat
about
moment.
It, that's what I hear.
It's a neat moment. So you got a beautiful Capitol, this House Senate building, a fountain, just a beautiful garden kind of setting. And there's three statues back there. One of them is Martha Hughes Cannon, a hero of mine. I don't know the colonel, but there's some other statue of Colonel Kane or something.
I thought it was the Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah, I have no idea. But the third and new one is Mariner Eccles, a beautiful statue. People need to go look at that. I found myself tweeting during that ceremony that Mariner Eccles could just be the most influential Utah ever.
Well, he got Brigham Young.
I know, and I thought about Brigham. I put in my tweet since Brigham Young, but then afterwards I'm sort of like, yeah, but in, you know, I mean, got us through the Great Depression, helped form the IMF and the World Bank. certainly carried on the legacy that has now invested in so many things.
It was FDR's economic brain.
Yeah. I don't know. And he was a Utah, and he was born in Logan and an Ogden guy.
I loved the moment because you had the entire political establishment sitting there unveiling this, and a feisty, outspoken, funny 80-year-old Spence Eccles up there kind of looking them all in the face. And Eccles lately just kind of says what he thinks. And I find it a delight.
It's wonderful.
Just wherever he's talking, he just kind of tells it the way it is. Maybe since he turned
88. He's a father of our state, a statesman for
us. So he said, he basically said he thought we ought to be deficit spending. We've got to go in. We've got to make this happen. His other nephew is sitting close to me and said he was not a Democrat. He was a socialist. I mean, he was the New Deal. He came up with it. He was Keynes before Keynes. He was a great Utahn. He somewhat became a Republican when he decided to run for the Senate as a Republican and then adopted being a socialist Republican for a while. But here was a pillar. And as all these people were talking and as the governor was sitting right next to Mr. Eccles, who was speaking about this socialist great Utah, and I could feel the Capitol building shake just a little bit as it was happening. There we got a great Democrat right there standing forever. Right there by the Capitol. It's a good thing.
I think he's a good Republican, but he had some very progressive ideas. The New Yorker magazine did a little nice little profile on Janet Yellen, and it said in the article, she's the most liberal Fed chair since Mariner Eccles. So there's something to what you're saying, Jim. Chris, I'm sorry to cut you out here, but we're running out of time. But I just want to make this switch. So Mariner Eccles, David Eccles, they are from Scotland. And whenever, at the Eccles School of Business, when we have our convocations, we play bagpipes. Because it's Scotland. So big vote today. Chris, how would you vote and why?
You know, so I've been thinking about this. This issue just totally popped up on me. I haven't been following it for weeks. Do you have any Scottish blood in you? I don't. I do have some Irish blood and a lot of English blood.
Okay.
So I should probably be pro-monarch and pro-queen. But I'm going to take this point of view. As an American and somebody that also broke away from the mothership at one point, kudos to Scotland. They need, what I think they're really hoping for is they want to get away from all the royal news. They don't want to hear about the royal baby. They don't want to hear about what Prince Harry's doing. It's what we wanted to break away from, and Scotland's looking for the same thing.
So kudos for them. Break away. How would you vote and why?
I wouldn't vote. I don't have a clue how I would vote. I don't have.
Is that the new Democratic message this year? Just stay home.
You're in Scotland. Stay home. Exactly.
I gotta say, I don't have Scottish blood. I have the Irish and English blood in me, but I want them to stay part of the mothership here. You can be a great Brit and a great Scot, and I love them. I love them together.
There we go.
We'll see how it goes. I don't know if it's time for gripes yet, but let's do it. And I'm assuming, Chris, you came prepared with a gripe because you know how our program works. You got a quick gripe for us?
I'm ready. I am tired of the overreaction that we live in where everything has to turn into an emergency and a overreaction. If you don't apologize or do whatever the right way, we have gotten to the point where we're going to have to start ripping our clothes and lighting ourselves on fire in order to apologize. We have just gone over the top. Demanding everything right away, instantaneous, and I'm tired of it. I think we need to be more thoughtful as we think about issues and solutions and problems and the things that are affecting us. I'm tired of the overreaction, knee-jerk reaction.
Just quick comment on that. I see the NFL is doing just the opposite, where they're not apologizing quickly enough. Jim?
I'm sorry, Chris. My shout-out goes to Mia Love.
Wow.
Another reason why she shouldn't be elected. There's this problem with a police department that she once ran that is troubled, that is a lot of problems. Her very expensive advisors are all around her. Can't you see it? And they sit down to her and they say to her, whatever you do, you don't want to be mentioned in anything about this situation. The next day in the Salt Lake Tribune, the quote from Mia Love is, quote, I don't want to be mentioned in anything. I think it should just go through the process. I mean, Mia Love should not be in Congress. Another reason is because of the troubled police department she left. And without her spin doctors, she is a mess.
I have a great gripe, and I don't have time to develop it. I'm going to save it for another week. But it has something to do with the state flag, so I'll just kind of tease it that way. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Today's program was produced by Tyler Ford. We hope you've enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for listening.